Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is February 29th. We're in Parshas Kedoshim, and we are on page 664, top of the page, Pasuk Chav Zayin, verse 27. Lo sakifu pa'as roshchem, do not round the corners of your head.
Sorry.
V'lo sashchis es pa'as zikanecha, and do not destroy the corners of your beard.
What's the edge of your scalp?
I didn't say the edge of your scalp.
That's what the English says.
I didn't say that.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
I said the corners of your head and the corners of your beard.
So what corners do you have on your head?
Okay, we'll get to it. Hold on. Okay, so do not round the corners of your head and do not destroy the corners of your beard. Now, it's two different prohibitions. It's two different laven, and it only applies to men. So one is not to round the corners of your head, and the other is not to destroy the corners of your beard. One is not to round, and one is not to destroy. That is a very significant difference in language, that one says not to round, and the other one says not to destroy. Now, to round is referring to the sideburns, because on a person's head, the hair, we're talking about the roots of the hair. We're not talking about the length of the hair, but the roots of the hair. If one would cut off the sideburns, then the hair would be rounded. Now, round means if you look at a person head on from their, directly at their face, the roundness of their head, of their hair, if they would cut off their sideburns, would not be, what's the right word? It wouldn't be like you have a roundness that is perpendicular to the that is parallel to the ground. It would be on an angle, because the way a person's hair works is it's in an angle to the ground. In other words, the circle that you would see wouldn't look like this. It would look like this. On an angle, right? Okay, but at any rate, this is the issur to cut off the peos, what we call the peos, which is the corners, which is the sideburns of the head. It does not say not to destroy the sideburns. It says not to round the head. Therefore, the prohibition against cutting the peos is even without a razor. Even with scissors, it is prohibited to cut the sideburns so short that the head would appear to be rounded. Now, how short is that? That's a matter of debate of exactly how short would the hair need to be in order for the person to violate this prohibition. At least one of the opinions, which is at least easy to repeat, is that if it's so short that one cannot bend the hair over and have the tip of the hair touch the root of the hair. Right? A hair that is long, you can bend the hair over and it can touch its root. A very, very short hair, you can't do that. So the sideburns have to be long enough that one can still turn the hair over and it would touch the root. Now, where is the sideburn? What are we talking about? So it's obviously the part that's next to the ear. The question is, how high does it go and how low does it go? At what point is the sideburn no longer considered? The sideburn's either considered as part of the head, in which case there's no prohibition, or it's considered part of the beard, in which case it's not this prohibition, rather you enter the prohibition of the second half of this pasuk. So there is, again, a debate exactly where what's considered to be the pa'as harosh, the corner of the head, again, they're with different opinions, but we're going to at least say the opinion that if the hair that is equal to the lower part of the ear, where the ear meets this, where the ear actually connects to the face, to the cheek, right? Not the part that hangs below, but the part where it connects. Mm-hmm. Right over there, you draw a parallel line, and then that would be the length. Some say a little higher than that. It's where this part of the ear here, this middle part of the ear, mm-hmm. across from that. Mm-hmm. And that would be the length of the sideburn, and it would have to grow at least down to there. One could not cut beyond that, cut the hair so short that it could not be turned over to touch its root. What about moving up the head? This is also significant for people who get very short haircuts. So it includes all of the hair that's on this side of the ear. And according to many opinions, you would draw a line like this on a diagonal and would include all this hair as well. That it would not be allowed to be cut shorter than being able to turn the hair over on its root. Now today, it has become very fashionable for men to get very, very short haircuts, their entire heads. And you see many people, even in our community, getting very, very short haircuts. It is not simple. It is not simple that they're very close to violating this law. They have to be very, very careful. They just don't know. Most people who do it don't realize that they are coming very close to violating this law. That they want us to be careful not to cut this part of the hair so short that the hair cannot be turned.
Yeah. Is this a chok, or do we know why?
I mean, simply it's a chok. I mean, the simpler reason it's a chok. They say the different mafarshim say that when those who served the avodah zarah used to cut the hair that short. But whatever it is, the Torah says it. You know, it doesn't.
We kind of know.
Now. As I said, this would apply even without a razor, even cutting with the scissors, to cut it so short that it gets to that point. Now, anything above that area, so again, anything that moves, that's here or in the back of the head, would there'd be no prohibition. One could cut that as short as they wish. And a man could use a razor on their head if it's nowhere near the beard or the peyos. So, for example, it's very common barbers will use a razor on the back of the neck for the hair on the back of the neck. That's perfectly acceptable for a man to have a razor used on the hair on the back of his neck. That's nowhere near the beard, nowhere near the sideburns, and therefore that would be perfectly fine. But as I just want to emphasize again, the sideburns are prohibited even with scissors to cut it too short. Now, there are those who want to keep this mitzvah in an extra special way, so they grow this hair and don't cut it at all. That's not what the Torah says, but that is an extra hidur, it's an extra special being careful in this mitzvah, and that's where you'll see some men growing their sideburns, and they'll kind of wrap it around their ears. That's an extra zihir, it's an extra being careful in this mitzvah. So, what? Yes, yeah, so no, some people do it. And then of course, you know, Hasidim do it. So it's an extra zahirus in this mitzvah, an extra being careful in this mitzvah. Yeah.
So you could be bald but have sideburns.
Yeah. Yeah. That's and you can cut, you can totally shave the hair on your head, but you gotta leave the sideburns.
Okay.
That's right.
But sometimes you could be bald right there.
Yeah, well, if it falls down, you can't do anything about it. Okay. But you're not allowed to cut it yourself.
I was just gonna say the prohibition is on cutting.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Now, women are not commanded in this. Women can cut their hair however they wish. You can use a razor wherever you wish. The discussion comes up, a woman cutting a man's hair. If a woman who is not commanded about this mitzvah cuts the sideburns of a man who is commanded in the mitzvah, so you get into all kinds of discussion about that. But obviously, it should not be done. The question is, does she actually violate it, or is it only rabbinic in nature, whatever it is? It should not be done, but it's questionable where exactly she fits in this particular commandment. the question also becomes how wide it goes. Some people like to thin out their sideburns. mean, how far apart, how wide does the, and I talked about how low and how high. What about how wide? So that also, people take liberties. They don't realize that they are encroaching on this prohibition, because the width of it is any part that's on this side of the ear, of course, is included. And even the part right above the ear, it would probably go, according to many opinions, it goes till the middle of the ear. So up here, it kind of spreads out a little bit. So again, a person has to be careful in how they have their hair cut. Now that is the corners of the head. What about the second half of the pasuk? One should not destroy the corners of the beard. Now this doesn't say not to round. It says not to destroy. Lo sashchis. Do not destroy. So first of all, where are the corners of the beard? And second of all, what does it mean to destroy the corners of the beard? So destruction would be with a razor. Cutting with scissors would not be destruction of the beard. It would be acceptable to cut with scissors. And that is where you get the practice today that men will shave their beards with an electric razor. Why is an electric razor any better than a regular razor? A razor is prohibited. You can't use a razor in your beard. We'll talk about where on the beard in a moment, but you can't use a razor in your beard. So why is it that men use an electric razor? So it has nothing to do with being electric versus being manual. But the reason is because the electric razors have a guard. And they have to have a guard because since they're electric and they move so fast, if there was no guard, God forbid, it would cut up a person's face. So there has to be a guard. The way that the guard works would stop the when you take a razor is moved against the skin and it's you drag the razor against the grain of the hair and it cuts the hair. But the way the electric razors work, it's not meant to be pushed in any particular direction, whether against the grain, with the grain. It's not supposed to make a difference. So in order to have an appliance that will cut the beard irrespective of which way you move the electric razor, it has to work through a scissors motion, which means all of these electric razors not only have the blade that's spinning, but there's an additional part of it that acts as a scissors where there are two blades catching the hair and cutting it. Anytime you have a scissors motion, you're by definition not going to be destroying the root of the hair. Because whenever you have a scissors motion, there are two blades. The hair gets caught between the two blades and cut. Well, the bottom blade is up against the skin, and the top blade running against it cuts it. But it can't. You're always going to have that bottom blade against the skin, which will mean you're not cutting all the way up against the skin. You're cutting a little bit above the skin. Therefore, in theory, with these electric razors, the skin should always feel somewhat rough after shaving because it can't cut all the way against the skin because you always have that second blade. Of course, the electric razor companies are always trying to get as smooth a shave as possible, and they don't want the skin to feel rough, so they're always trying to figure out how to change this. So various methods have been devised over the years. The most famous one that creates potential halachic issues is the lift and cut method, where what they claim happens is that the blade actually catches the hair and pulls the hair up from its root so that it is now not as close, it's now not in the root as well as it should be. Then it is cut through a scissors motion, but then after the blade leaves, the hair then snaps back into place beneath the level of the skin. So the skin actually feels smooth, even though a scissors motion was used to cut the hair. Nevertheless, the skin feels smooth. That's the claim of the lift and cut method. Whether that actually works in practice or not is a matter of debate. Also, whether it works uniformly over an entire face. A face is not a flat surface. There are contours and curves, and therefore it's going to necessarily do a better job in some areas and a worse job in other areas. It's not as simple as they like to make it appear in advertising.
Is it Isra then for you?
So that's the question. Is it Isra or not? Some say that it is prohibited because at the end of the day, the finished product is that the skin is totally smooth, at least in some areas, and therefore the final product is similar to using an actual razor, which means that the hair has in effect been destroyed, and that's prohibited. Others say that no, since the way it's done is through a scissors motion, then it's okay even though the finished product has a very smooth shave. The Rabbi Heinemann in Baltimore of the Star K, he raised a different concern, which is that sometimes these blades are so sharp that they can cut without the scissors motion. That they're so sharp that even the bottom blade will cut without the top blade running against it to create a scissors cut. In which case, the cut is being done through a razor, a regular razor. So therefore, what he advocates with these shavers is to blunt the blades. That when one purchases a new electric shaver, to take a key and run it along the blades and blunt the blades, which means it will not give as good a shave. But that's the whole point. And in that way, making it okay. Now, the truth is that any old shaver is already blunt unless you've had it sharpened. These shavers do not remain sharp. They claim, the companies will claim that they sharpen themselves, but that's just advertising. They do something themselves, but they're not as good as new. They become blunt as time goes on. You can actually have them sharpened, or you can replace the blades. But as long as you haven't done that, if you've had the razor, the shaver, for any amount of time, it already is blunt and therefore will not cut as close and will not do what the advertising claims it will do. But using a regular razor would be prohibited because that is, in fact, you're destroying the hair. Where are the five corners of the beard? This, again, is a major debate. One opinion is that everybody agrees that the four of the five are symmetrical, meaning two on one side of the face, two on the other side of the face, and they correspond to each other. And the fifth one is somewhere in the front of the face. So that some say that place number one would be right around the where the edge of the sideburn is. Number two would be lower down where the cheek curves around. That would be number two. Three and four would be the same thing on the other side of the face. And number five, some say it's here on the chin. Some say it's here. Others say it's here. There's some place in the middle would be the fifth spot. Others say that the two on the sides are not up here and down here, but rather they are like this, somewhere like that. So we don't know exactly where the five corners of the beard are. Since we don't know, therefore we do not use a razor anywhere on the beard. We don't use it anywhere from the sideburns and down. We don't use a razor. On the sideburns, you can't use a razor either, but there you can't even use the scissors. At least they cut it very, very short. So we don't use a razor on anywhere on the beard itself, including the area on the neck just below the beard. There is what we do not use a razor because we don't know exactly where are the five corners of the beard. A clippers, when you have these electric clippers that they vibrate like the clippers, those are scissors. So therefore, they are for sure okay on a beard. But if you put it to the lowest setting, they might be prohibited on the sideburns, depending on how close they are cutting the sideburns. But for the beard, those trimmers or clippers are for sure okay, not a problem. The Gemara discusses what if someone has a hair removal item other than a razor? Would that be permitted on the beard? And the consensus seems to be that would be permitted to use a non-razor, because the prohibition is with a razor, a tar, and without, if a razor is not being used, even though the net result is that the hair is removed, that would be acceptable. That's not really a practical thing for men on a daily basis, but there are those who do use that instead of using a shaver of any sort. To pull out an individual hair using a tweezers and to pluck out a hair, even on the beard, would be acceptable. It's only with a razor that would be a destruction using a razor would be a problem, but to pull out an individual hair would not be this violation of destroying the corners of the beard.
And the eyebrows too.
Eyebrows are not part of this discussion, meaning that it's only the beard and the sideburns. Now, for a man to groom himself
like a woman,
meaning other areas of hair, that is debatable, meaning if it's something that only women do, it will be prohibited for that reason, but not for this reason. Different issue. It would be like wearing the clothing of a woman to groom himself like a woman.
But men do so much today. So
men do more than they used to.
Right.
Yeah.
So like if somebody, a man has really bushy eyebrows or a single one, it would be usher to give him like two eyebrows.
So we're going to learn, Mitzvah Hashem, we'll get to the Isser of Lo Yilbash Gever Simlas Isha, and we'll discuss that. But something which is unseemly would be permitted. If it's to beautify, it's not so simple. Then it would be more of an issue. But if the man looks funny and people will look askance at him, then it's not to beautify him; it's to make him look quote unquote normal or to make him look presentable or acceptable, right?
Especially for Shira.
Yeah, right. Pasuk Chavches verse 28. V'seret la nefesh lo sitnu b'vsarchem, and a cut. This would be a cut for a soul. How do they translate it? They
for
say
the dead. Cut your flesh
for the dead.
For the dead.
Yeah, cut your flesh for the dead. Lo sitnu b'vsarchem, you shall not put in your flesh. Uchsoves ka'akar lo sitnu v'achem, that's a tattoo. You should not put in yourselves. Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. There was common practice in olden days that people who heard about the death of a loved one would cut themselves. It would be a form of mourning to take a knife and put a slash in themselves as a way of showing mourning for the dead. So the Torah explicitly prohibits that. One is not allowed to cut themselves for the dead. The truth is, as we'll learn later on, one is really not allowed to deliberately hurt themselves or put blemishes themselves anyway. But for here you have a specific prohibition against putting a cut in oneself for the dead. A tattoo.
Right.
Yeah.
What that made me think of was when we go to a funeral or something, then the...
We cut our clothing.
Yeah. Is there any connection?
Well, the cutting of the garment is a halacha that a person must do for a relative.
But is it from the Torah? Or did they get it?
Right, instead of here?
No, it's not from here. That this may be an extension of that, but this is not... Right. Okay. Yeah.
It makes sense that if you cut that instead of yourself,
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, interesting.
He says no.
No, I'm saying it didn't come from here, but it is. They are obviously related. They're both for the dead, and they're both yeah, very good. It's very interesting.
How do we deal today with the proliferation of tattoos? Because it affects...
So let's talk about tattoos. So one is not allowed to put a tattoo in their flesh. Hashem says, I am Hashem. One is not allowed to put a tattoo in their flesh. Let's begin with debunking the urban myth. One who does put a tattoo in their skin can be buried in a Jewish cemetery. For some reason, this has become this thing that people believe that the person with a tattoo cannot be buried in a Jewish cemetery. It is not true. It is not true. It doesn't make it permitted. One is still not allowed to put a tattoo in themselves, but it does not preclude a person from being buried in a Jewish cemetery. The general idea seems to be that Hashem gave us our bodies, and we are not to we're not to cut our bodies. We're not to mistreat our bodies, and one of the ways of mistreating is to put in a tattoo. The a tattoo would be defined as a mark put into the skin that is permanent. The way that the mark becomes permanent versus temporary has to do with how deeply embedded the mark is. If one writes on their skin, then either it will get rubbed away, or if one waits long enough and doesn't rub it away, but the natural process of the skin shedding its layers and rejuvenating itself will eventually get rid of that mark. Okay. That's because, what's that?
The comments, a lot of places to have henna, especially before a woman gets married. The
tissue dye.
Yeah, but it's not in, it's on.
It's not.
No. They have what?
Henna. They have a henna celebration before the wedding where they
It's a dye.
The father should custom.
They're religious.
Father, Persian. Before
Indian,
wedding.
Right.
But it doesn't go
in. Do they wash it off?
It washes off.
Yeah, okay. So it's like makeup.
Yeah, it's like makeup.
But eventually, the day before the wedding.
It's after the mikvah.
What?
After the mikvah.
Right.
They like do the whole thing at the mikvah.
You learned something.
Yeah.
I'm glad we could teach you that. From your students, you shall learn.
At any rate.
Whether you like it or not.
The whole middle is used as a henna.
What?
They color the hair also with it.
Okay.
It's like an auburn color. It's a red thing.
Yeah,
it's a sign of celebration.
My grandmother was all red.
Really? So the if the dye that's being put on the skin is embedded into the skin beneath the layers of the skin, then it will be there forever, and that is what is prohibited. Unfortunately, once it's there, one really can't do anything about it. Because, as to my knowledge, the only way to get rid of a tattoo is to
put another tattoo in it.
No, I understand that it can be removed, but it's very costly and it's very
painful.
Yeah.
You know, I'm wondering with all the tattoos that the Jews got during the war, is that, you know, because
they didn't want it. They were forced into that.
Right.
They were forced into it.
Those are numbers. They weren't pictured like they did.
Well, numbers are also awesome. Doesn't mean you can't do it. But they didn't. They had no choice. They were forced into it.
Right.
Yeah.
If the tattoo is for a medical purpose, is that then okay?
No. Unless it's life and death. But what do you mean by for a medical purpose?
Sometimes they use tattoos to line up radiation therapy.
Yeah.
So.
But that's not permanent, though, is it?
Yes,
I thought it came up. I was told by somebody I know in the community that eventually it washes off.
You mean like when they put a marker in?
It's permanent. They put a dot on the body so that when the person repeats his radiation, their radiation therapy, they're able to wind up the machine so that it can be done.
To my knowledge, that would not be permitted unless we argue that that's a life and death situation since they have a dangerous illness. So if that procedure is necessary to save the person's life, then it would be okay. One would have to decide whether that is in fact necessary to save the life. What's that?
For cancer.
No, I understand. But just because it's for that disease doesn't necessarily mean that particular practice is life-saving. Right. Meaning that, and if they don't put the dot, maybe they can. Just it isn't as exact. Like, I don't know. I don't know enough. But if in fact it is necessary to save the person's life, then it will be permitted.
Okay.
people unfortunately today do put in tattoos. It's an issue, and it is something which when they do it, this is true. Even nothing to do with the Torah, just that young people often put in tattoos and think that it's going to be something that they will always cherish and value, and then when they get a little older, they realize that it was pretty foolish. That's an unfortunate thing, but if it is a prohibition in the Torah, and unfortunately, once it's done, it's very difficult to deal with it. Pasuk Chavtes. By the way, you know, a lot of times it's a question of glorifying the culture or not. When my wife took my daughters at whatever age she takes them to get their ears pierced, so you go to a piercing place. Very often, the person who's doing the piercing is full of piercings.
Right.
And as my wife says, that it's not a place that I would want to be. So, we do pierce ears for women, but there is a popular culture out there which we do not agree with, and very often the piercings and the tattoos go together. Often, you know, one thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's Rachel Imenu's tonight yard site, but remember she had nose rings.
Yeah, well, nose rings were you know where.
Right.
Yeah.
What did the men do?
Did it pierce the nose or did it just clip on?
No. They pierced the nose.
They pierced the nose. Why would people go through that?
You can't. Why do people pierce their ears?
Tongues. Right, tongues, eyebrows.
Okay.
Other than those
pairs,
the answer.
Pasuk Chavtes, verse 29. Al techalel es bitcha lahaznosa. Do not profane your daughter to make her promiscuous. Or it says here, to make her a harlot is what it says in the English. Velo sizneha aretz umalaha aretz zima. The land should not become promiscuous and it will become filled with promiscuity, depravity. Now, the reason why this is here, what this means is the following. The halacha is that a man, a father, can marry off his daughter. A father of a young girl, a girl who is beneath the age of majority, a father can marry her off, which means that a father can go to a potential chasan and offer his daughter to the chasan in marriage. The chasan would give money to the father, meaning rather than put a ring on the woman's hand, here it's an underage woman, an underage girl. Therefore, he would give money to her father, and the daughter would become married to him. This is an official marriage. It's a legal marriage in the Torah. This young girl is now a married woman. That would be the halacha. And she would have all of the rights and responsibilities of a wife. So that now the husband is required to feed her, to clothe her, etc. The Gemara discusses when it is appropriate, when it is inappropriate to do that sort of marriage. But the Torah does give the power of marriage to a father over a young girl. So the Torah here is limiting that power, or at least warning against abusing that power, and warning a father that you may give the hand of your daughter to somebody else in marriage, you may not give the hand of your daughter to someone else for anything other than marriage. That's what's being said over here. So a father could theoretically take that concept too far and say that I have control over my daughter in this manner, and therefore, I can use her to make money and use her in a promiscuous way. So the Torah gives a specific prohibition against a father doing that, but a father does have permission to marry off his daughter. We don't do this today. We don't marry off underage girls. It's not done. It should not be done. But the father does have, according to the Torah, does have that ability to do it. So a father does need to be careful not to do it in jest, to play games, because it does have binding effect. And if it would be done, a divorce document would have to be issued in order to free her, which would then make her no longer able to marry a Kohen. It would have all of the consequences of a regular marriage. Pasuk Lamed, verse 30. Es Shabbos Osayti Shmoru Umikdashi Tiro. You shall guard my Shabbos and you shall fear my mikdash, that is my temple, the Beis HaMikdash, ani Hashem, mayim Hashem. This is one of the places where we derive that even though one is required to fear and honor the Beis HaMikdash, but the construction of the Beis HaMikdash does not push off Shabbos. Shabbos takes preference over the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So even if Mashiach will come tomorrow, and therefore we will begin building the Beis HaMikdash, the work will have to cease for Shabbos, and then continue after Shabbos. See, one cannot build the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos.
Would he come on Shabbos?
No, he's not. The Gemara says he cannot come on Shabbos. I assume that, you know, we don't really know 100%, but that's what the Gemara says. Can't come on Shabbos. What does it mean to fear the Beis HaMikdash? So there we have the rules of respect for the Beis HaMikdash. So respect for the Beis HaMikdash means one cannot use the Beis HaMikdash as a shortcut. If I have to get from one side of the Temple Mount to the other side of the Temple Mount, one is not allowed to cut through the Beis HaMikdash. One is not allowed to spit in the area of the Beis HaMikdash. One is not allowed to walk with his walking shoes through the Beis HaMikdash. One has to remove their shoes. All of these are part of the respect for the Beis HaMikdash. One has to fear the Mikdash, and those are all included. Just want to check and make sure that I didn't miss one of the other prohibitions. Yeah, one cannot walk into the Beis HaMikdash with his walking stick or with his money belt. All those things are prohibited because all those things make the Beis HaMikdash appear to be some sort of a commercial place.
But if somebody has a walking stick, maybe they need it to walk.
Yeah, that if they need it because they can't walk without it, then it's like it's their leg, it's like their foot.
Okay.
But if it's just a more of a
dandy.
Yeah, right. One is not allowed to do that.
Can you extrapolate from that this also applies to a Beis Knesset?
So certain of those halachas do. The Mishnah does apply certain things. You're not allowed to use a shul as a shortcut either. So this, they have the same idea. So if one has to get from one end of the shul to the other, one should not cut through the sanctuary. So in our sanctuary here in the shul, that's not such an issue because there really is nothing on the other side. So it's rare that someone would cut through. Yeah, the AKC
it doesn't anymore.
Right. It doesn't anymore. The Kollel Beis HaMikdash, because it's circular, because there are rooms on either side, one could have this problem. One has to be careful not to cut through it. Sometimes, actually, the Daily Minyan can end up being a problem in this regard, where someone is trying to get from Heritage Hall, let's say, to the area outside the Kollel, and they may go downstairs, cut through the Daily Minyan, and come out the other side. That is prohibited. One is not allowed to do that.
Give a class on that for them and remind them.
Okay. So what is that?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So one can't do that because that would be cutting through. That would be making a shul into a shortcut. It applies to a shul into a Beis Medrash. One is not allowed to make them into a shortcut for this reason. If one does have to walk through a shul, because there is no other way to do this, and they have to cut through it, so then the practice is to walk into the shul, sit down, say a pasuk, like Poseach Esadecho Maspil Echolchai Ratzon, or Shema Yisrael, or something like that, and then get up and go through. Because that way, at least the person walked in, used the shul for what a shul is meant to be used for, then got up and continued on. Because if you come into shul to daven, if you come in for a legitimate reason, you're allowed to go out the other side. Once you're in for a good reason, you're allowed to then go out whichever way you want. That's not called making it into a shortcut. So if one does need to do it, then that's the practice. It still shouldn't be done on a regular basis, but if one has to, that would be the way to avoid the problem. But obviously we do wear shoes in a shul, even though one's not allowed to wear shoes in the Beis HaMikdash, we do wear shoes in a shul. But we do take from here the general concept of respect for a shul, for a Beis HaMikdash, and not to treat it like it's, again, like it's some commercial place. Really, one is not supposed to talk about things that are mundane in a shul or a Beis HaMikdash. That is, would be the preferable practice, to be careful about how one speaks in a shul or in a Beis HaMikdash for this reason.
All right, the men always shake hands. I thought I heard one time that you shouldn't
you like kiss somebody in shul.
The Rama writes, you're not allowed to kiss your child in shul. You can't kiss your child in shul. What's that?
I thought that was the one that was okay.
No. You can't kiss your child in shul. Okay. And the reason is because a person has to remember there is no ahava, there is no love that compares to the love of Hashem. And therefore, the love from a parent to a child should not be displayed in shul with kissing a child.
Just to friends or whatever.
So some say friends are okay because that's not really love in the same way. That's just a greeting. That kisses with a friend is just a greeting. But kissing a child, that is in love. So the time that I see this problem happening the most, where parents don't realize they kiss their children in shul, is on Simchas Torah, because that's when you have the kids in shul the most. Mm-hmm. And so there I often see parents kissing their children, and they don't realize that they really should not be doing that in a shul. Yeah.
Put a sign up.
Yeah, okay. People, you know, they don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
Does that include other people's children?
So that
in my case it does, but I know
that's good.
Lamed Aleph.
Can you kiss other people?
Well, again, it depends. A kiss in greeting is like shaking with somebody's hand,
right?
But if it's a kiss out of love, usually when we kiss other people's children, it's you know they're so cute and you know so that sort of thing really should be avoided in shul.
Okay.
Yeah. We say have a sign up and brace.
Right. No. From whom you're standing. Right. Lamed Aleph 31. Al tifnu el ha'ovos ve'la yid'onim. Do not turn to the ovos and the yid'onim. Two types of sorcery, which we'll talk about in a minute. Al tevakshu l'tam avahem. Do not seek to become defiled by them. Ani Hashem elokeichem, I am Hashem your God. And the ovos and yid'onim are conveniently translated as ovos and yid'onim. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Both involve, okay, the reason why they don't translate it is because there is a machlokas, there's a dispute in the Gemara exactly what each of these things are. Both involve some sort of divination with the dead, using a bone from the dead, using a bone from a certain type of animal, using a skull, these sorts of things.
For rabbits, that would be a no-no.
Well, the ovos and yidonim are not necessarily that. This is very specific. These actually work. They work. Today we can't access it. We don't know how to do it today, thankfully. But they do work. We do have an example. For those of you who attend the Wednesday night shiur, we do have an example at the end of Shmuel Aleph, where we have Shaul HaMelech violating this prohibition and consulting. He doesn't actually do it. Shouldn't say he violates the prohibition because he doesn't do this. But he goes to a woman who is a Balas Ov, where she divines the dead. She violates the prohibition. And brings up Shmuel Hanavi from the dead. So the Gemara discusses that episode there. We learn a lot about it because of what happens in that episode over there. That's an actual real life example. So we learn a lot about it from that story. But either way, it is prohibited to do ovos and to do yid'onim, to divine the dead using these methods. And finally, Lamed Beis 32, Mipnei Seva Takum, one should get up in front of Seva. Seva means an elderly person. V'hadar Ta B'nei Zaken, and you shall give honor to the face of an elderly man, or not just man, woman too, an elderly person. V'yarei Samei Elokecha, you shall fear your God, Ani Hashem Ayva Hashem. Two different words for elderly, Seva and Zaken. Zaken is the more a common word in modern Hebrew today to use the word zaken to mean an elderly person. In the English translation, seva is translated as an old person, whereas zaken is translated as a sage. That's because zaken, the Gemara says, is a notrikon, is a acronym for ze kana chachma. This person has acquired wisdom. That's what it means, zaken. So zaken is not only someone who is old, but also a Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar, would be included in this requirement of zaken. So standing up for a seva, that is referring to an elderly person. But giving honor to the face of a zaken, that includes a Talmud Chacham as well, a Torah scholar. Now, we have to define what's called seva. What's called old? Here we have various opinions. What's called old? Is it 60 years old and up? which I think most of us would say is that's not old. Is it 70 years old and up, which we would say that's not old, or what? What is exactly is old? Everybody agrees that 70 years would be included in seva, so that if a person is under 70 and a 70-year-old or older person walks by, the under 70 person would have to stand up for the over 70 person. Why is it that you rarely see that today? That's because one is allowed to be mochel. One is allowed to say, if they are 70 or older, one is allowed to say, I am not comfortable with people standing up for me. I'd rather they didn't do it. And as far as I'm concerned, they don't have to stand up for me. That's acceptable. And if someone is mochel, someone foregoes that honor, then it's acceptable. The other people do not have to stand up. We presume that most people today are not comfortable with other people standing up, and that's why we don't necessarily do, at least not on a regular basis. However, even when we don't stand up, one should still, the Gemara says, show that they would like to stand up, because they're showing that I would stand up, but I know this person doesn't require me to do so. And that would be to kind of like lean forward on one's chair to show that one is really ready to get up. That's where it comes from, where a person walks by and you see someone go like this, right? That's what that is. That's not standing up. Standing up is standing up. Going like this, that's not standing up. That's just showing that you would stand up, but you know the person doesn't require you to do it, but I know that the halacha really is I should be getting up. That's what that is.
So what am I supposed to do?
So that's what one should do. That when an elderly person walks by, again, I use the word elderly, as the Gemara says it. So as a person walks by, then someone should just to show that they really would want to get up. It's a way of showing respect. But we don't have to actually get up because the person was mochel. Now, if the person's not mochel, we have to get up.
Is 70 derived from David HaMelech because he lived 70 years?
I don't think it's derived from there.
Okay.
I'm not sure where it's derived, but I don't think it's derived from there.
In Tillim also it says, when you're past 70, was it in Tillim? Perkei Avos, right? Yeah. When you're past 70, you're...
Well, it doesn't say that, but it's, now
it kind of does.
Now, this is why also. I always find it ironic when sitting at a chuppah and the chassan walks down and the kala walks down, and often the grandparents walk down. So you understand that there is no source in halacha anywhere to stand up for the kala. Doesn't exist. Standing up for the chassan has a very, very weak source. Very, very weak source. The reason to stand up for the chassan, if there is a reason to stand up for the chassan, is not because he's a king, because he's not a king. But rather, the reason to stand up for the chassan is because he's on his way to do a mitzvah. So since he's on his way to do a mitzvah, when someone's going to do a mitzvah, there is a custom to stand up for the person doing a mitzvah. That's why. If there's a reason, that would be the reason to do it. Then why not for the kala? Because marriage is a mitzvah on the chassan, not on the kala. There's no mitzvah in the Torah for a woman to get married. There's a mitzvah for a man to get married. So therefore, which one can ask why that's the case, but that is the case. So for the chassan, there is sort of a reason to stand up. For the kala, there is no reason to stand up, but everybody jumps up. But for the grandparents, who are often over 70, right, the Torah requires you to stand up. And everybody sits in their seats as if nothing's happening. Right? To me, it's mind-boggling. Like it's totally topsy-turvy with the way it should be. Now, the fact of the matter is, this is only if you're within 4 amos. 4 amos is 6 to 8 feet of where the elderly person is walking past. So if you're not in the front row, you're not on the aisle as they're walking down, you're not required to get up even for the older person. But it just always bothers me that the chassan and kala get everybody jumps out of their seats. Yes.
Do they have to be in the room? And the reason I'm asking this is when I'm in the kollel davening and you go into or out of your office, I don't know whether I should be
standing. No. Certainly not. With the Talmud Chacham, it doesn't say to stand up. It says one should give honor. Now, one form of honor is to stand up. But the other forms of honor are similar to a parent, not to sit in his seat, contradict, you know, the same types of rules we have with parents. We're talking here about someone who is a significant Talmud Chacham. We're not talking here about just anybody who has studied Torah. Of course, we should certainly treat our people who learn Torah well, because we want them to learn Torah. But this particular requirement in the Torah is talking about the big Talmidei Chachamim, the ones who really, the great Torah scholars, the great sages, and those are the people that we would stand up for, and those are the people that we would honor, that's what it's referring to over here. One last point is that when it says, V'yareis amei Elokecha, ani Hashem, fear your God, I am Hashem, so Rashi explains, a person might be in a position where they realize that an elderly person or a Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar, is walking by, and they pretend that they don't notice in order not to be bothered to stand up. So Hashem says, V'yareisa me'elokecha, fear your God. I know whether you know or not. Don't play any games over here. So therefore, fear your God, because I know. So be honest with yourselves about what you know and what you don't know. Okay. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.